Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Be Bold America. I'm your host, Jill Cody. Again, we'll be missing Dr. Pettus Perry today. Actually, he's taking a leave of absence to launch his new consulting business. But he'll be back for our December 18th program when we talk about living a committed life with Lynn Twist. I, for one, will sure miss my friend, and I know we all wish him the best. Now, on with the show. Our program today is Roar Like a Goddess. In light of women in the United States losing rights and women in Iran fighting for theirs, we will be speaking with Akara Shunya, author of Roar Like a Goddess, Every Woman's Guide to Becoming Unapologetically Powerful, Prosperous, and Peaceful. In her new book, Shunya re-envisions ancient primary goddess archetypes in a revolutionary way. In Roar Like a Goddess, Akara Shunya honors her trailblazing Vedic spiritual and progressive roots while breaking the shackles of tradition to bring modern-day women an inclusive feminist spirituality. Shunya invites us to step into our divine immensity and lead lives of power, abundance, and freedom. We have big things to do. Akara Shunya is also president of the Awaken Self Foundation, located in California, and in addition is the author of two other best-selling books, Ayurveda Lifestyle Wisdom and Sovereign Self. She is regarded as a teacher's teacher, and we are honored to have her personally teach us today. Welcome to Be Bold America, Shunya.
Thank you. This is so exciting. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's exciting for me, too. And first of all, Shunya, am I pronouncing your title and your name correctly, Akara Shunya?
My name is beautifully pronounced by you, Shunya, and my title is Acharya, which means
Acharya.
A master teacher.
Thank you. Acharya. Thank you. You begin your book by saying, it's time to roar like a goddess. I have my ideas of why it's time, but why is it that you think it's time?
Because I think the conversation has changed. It's not just about why we should roar, which is akin to claiming our authentic voice and our authentic rights. But the narrative now is about the cat's out of the bag, Jill. We all know now. And we don't have to give explanations anymore. It's like we've seen it, and we're done. And it's over with. And so it's time.
It's time to roar. I began this show by saying, in light of women in the United States losing rights and women in Iran fighting for theirs, what are some of your thoughts regarding what is happening to a woman's humanity right now?
Despite all the progress we've made, Jill, unfortunately, patriarchy is pervasive, and it's ubiquitous. It's not just in feudal societies or backward societies or religious societies. It's clearly evident in contemporary societies who pride to be modern, like the United States. And yet, look how women are striking back. And of all places in Iran, we see what's happening. It may be the first revolution where women have taken to the streets. And that's why I feel like our battle is not done, but we're ready. And we won't take it no more. That's what I feel.
And that's why we
the lionesses and the goddesses are out there.
They're out there. I sure feel it.
They're out there.
Now, how can goddesses from India serve as an inspiration for modern women, modern feminism? You discuss three in your book, and I'm probably going to murder the names, Durga, Lakshmi, and Sarasvati. What do these three Hindu goddesses have
beautiful.
To teach us?
Oh. Yeah.
I tried.
Well, would you know, that was perfect. And I want to say that it's interesting that a lot of ancient cultures do have a period which is pre-patriarchy. They do have stories and legends before humanity fell asleep. and men came forward and women stepped back. And these goddess stories are from that ancient time. But fortunately, they are intact because they've been passed down orally from the mother to the daughter right down to today. They are, you know, available everywhere. And I decided that my book should focus on these ancient goddesses and their legends, because these goddesses are in their womanly avatar or expression, and they too, interestingly, face patriarchal ideals, or which may be external or internalized. And I feel like we can learn about how to have clearer boundaries or clearer speech or clearer convictions when dealing with outer forces that are diminishing us. And equally important, the goddesses teach us how to annihilate the dark forces internalized in the form of self-doubt, in the form of that inner misogyny that just gives us this tendency to shrink, or tendency to accept lower wages, or be okay with being made to be invisible. So I feel like it's time to shine the goddess light and talk about how Durga, the goddess who gives us unapologetic power and strength, or how Lakshmi, who boldly lives up to her desire for a sensual, pleasureful, beautiful, prosperous life, and Saraswati, who represents uncompromised and radical self-acceptance. Can we begin to live like those goddesses now? I have begun to do that. Once I was not that goddess-like, really. And in my book, goddess is not just some airy-fairy entity. She's like this real-life, even badass woman who's really showing what it means to be whole more than holy.
I've been using a phrase lately of women that are unapologetically powerful as warrior women. Would you say that they're similar to what you're talking about with goddesses?
Yeah, and the warrior woman is, I really like it because Durga is called a warrior goddess. Ah. But when we say that, sometimes she is. And sometimes it feels like, you know how women's anger has been demonized. So a warrior woman is not a hag or a nag. A warrior woman goes to war for all the right reasons. She's in a state of battle with her own inner darkness and with outer darkness. So absolutely yay for the warrior woman and the warrior goddess Durga.
Well, you mentioned the word anger, and I actually received a email from a listener that follows the program for a long time. And he's actually a truck driver, Randolph, if you're listening. This is your comment. He sent me an email saying, interesting that a recent discovery in psychotherapy is that anger is actually a legitimate, useful emotion, like so many of the other emotions that we were incorrectly taught were inherently negative and could never be expressed, especially by folks like us who value civility and kindness. Anger is a protective emotion that elicits a roar in all animals when our space is violated. And I say our space has been violated and it's time to roar. So you talk about what is righteous anger and why is it important that we learn to express it. So can you talk about anger some more? Because I feel we have a very angry country. A lot of us, like Randolph is saying, are ready to roar or are. And you talk about it in as unconscious anger and conscious anger and superconscious anger. Please expand on that, because I think there are a lot of angry people.
I'm so happy to do that. And Jill, I really couldn't have written this book if I hadn't given permission within myself to experience my conscious anger that then became superconscious anger and allow me to explain. We all have some kind of unconscious anger, which is born from silly entitlements. And we all need to look at that because that can make us sick, first of all. It makes us bitter and jaded and broken. And it comes from our immaturity. But there is, as the commentator said, the person who sent the email, sorry, I'm forgetting his name.
Randolph.
But you had such a wise, Randolph, you had such a wise thing to share with us, because indeed, the ancient knowledge from India always said that all these emotions you're experiencing are divine, and there really is no need to demonize anger, especially because it rises within us as a protective mechanism, and it tells us of our boundaries being violated and probably some urgent action to be taken. And when we allow this anger and let it talk to us and inform us, anger is separate from the actions we take from anger, which could be stepping back or drawing a boundary or being assertive. Anger is simply an experience. It's a visceral, red-hot, urgent experience of the mind, of the thoughts, of the feelings at the level of the body and mind. And it really needs to come in and boom, it tells us what's going on. For example, when we get angry with our own crazy eating, that's when we begin a healthy diet plan. When we get angry with our own lethargy, we begin exercising. When we get angry with the way our friends are treating us and taking us for granted, we start saying no and mean it. Or we, you know, and different things happen because we got angry. But historically, women and people of color and people of mixed genders and non-binary genders, our anger has been dammed, and we've been asked to suppress it, stuff it, and just even behave like we never get angry. And religions universally have damned anger because I guess they just wanted, conditioned people who never ask questions. And probably that is why we are not in touch with our anger. And that is why women in so many countries and cultures continue to toe the line until now. Until now. And the more we channel our conscious anger individually, we become healthier and liberated. And when we channel our superconscious anger, at that time, we get angry, not just for our individual life story not going the way it should, but we get angry for everyone, for others' sufferings. And I feel really, Jill, that I wrote this book, Roar Like a Goddess, from a superconscious angry place where I was done with women folk and people of non-binary genders being rejected or dismissed just because of our genitals. Enough is enough. And sometimes when we're angry in a super conscious manner, we may even continue to host a podcast, a radio show like yours, where we continue to raise really valid themes. I was going through your bio before we began this conversation. I was noticing your journey.
Yes.
and your dedication. And you can be proud to say, well, it's not just from this sweet, soft, accommodating place. I'm darn angry. And I'm angry for everyone. And this is super conscious anger. And more strength to you.
Well, I certainly wrote my two books with a lot of anger about what was happening to our democracy and to our planet. You are listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Listen globally online from the KSQD.org website. Our topic today is Roar Like a Goddess. And we're speaking with Achara Shunya, author of Roar Like a Goddess, Every Woman's Guide to Becoming Unapologetically Powerful, Prosperous, and Peaceful, and the founder of Awakened Self Foundation. To learn more, visit awakenedself.com. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
why is community radio important to you?
I'm just looking around here at the birthday party, and my heart is full. I mean, it is so wonderful. People of all ages and all different backgrounds, and I was listening to those radio on the way in, and so diverse, and just people talking to their neighbors.
We're back, and we are speaking with our bold guest, Achara Sunya. Am I still mispronouncing your title?
Thank you. You're doing just fine.
I'm okay. Thank you. I just want to finish up a little bit more on the anger point, because we just experienced in January of 2021, January 6, 2021, a lot of righteous anger on the steps of the Capitol and in the Capitol. And there are women there, but they felt it was righteous anger. But actually, in reality, it was outrage and anger, but not based on the right reasons. So do you have thoughts about where our society is now with the lies and disinformation and the manipulation of women and men? That, I mean, it was a woman that was shot there in the Capitol, all based on this anger that they thought was righteous. Do you have any thoughts around that?
I think that is why books like mine are relevant, because we not only talk about channeling anger, but we also talk about discernment. And we talk about something called dharma, which is a Sanskrit word that's becoming more and more known in every language. And dharma is about evaluating our actions, and do they only benefit you and group of people who look like you, think like you, pray like you, mate like you, or are they for universal good? Are our actions going to be relevant for all of humanity, for our planet, for our environment, for nature? And this is a greater thinking. This is a greater lens than thinking just about our political allegiance or thinking about, you know, just our community or our race. It really, you know, ups the game, and it asks us to step into a greater human vibration. And so to roar like a goddess and to be raging like a goddess is not just in this self-created egotistic fumes and then feeling righteous, because the knowledge that I am channeling, known as the Vedic knowledge from India, first and foremost defines, do you, or ask this question, are you working with dharma or not? Or is your ego simply collapsed with your own agenda, and then you're hooting the horn of righteousness? Because then that's not righteousness, but stupidness or selfishness or self-absorbed behavior that is ultimately going to destroy our race, and our planet will have to pay the price for it. So it takes a little bit of deeper conversation and a deeper looking at. And that is why my book, along with conveying power, is also conveying responsibility and dharma. And I think that is what sets my book apart. It's not just about a woman, about a book that's telling women, you can do this, woman, go, go, go. It's also about, hey, wait, pause, think, discern, are your actions going to uphold this entire planet, or are they just going to benefit a few? Yeah, that's how it goes.
Well, that seems like a message that would be good for men, too. Are there differences in the teachings in this book than there would be for men?
I think dharma is universal.
Yes.
And
that's what I was thinking,
said
too,
by the Vedas, the ancient systems of knowledge from India that precede even religions from India, dharma is being upheld even by the stars and mountains and rivers, and that's why they're doing their own thing. It's we humans who forget our dharma. And it's we humans who become entitled, and we, you know, you wrote in your book on climate, like, you know, what's going on? It's so urgent. So it's us humans who are violating the Dharma. So the Dharma teachings are common to everyone, but my book elucidates some more teachings for women specifically and other gendered beings and people who identify with feminine spaces. Because we've been kind of pushed back, or we've been now conditioned and educated to take a second position on this planet. So one of our dharma is to stand up for what is right and truthful, to look at self-respect and self-esteem and worthiness and really choose that. One of the dharmas that I want to bring forward in this book is about, just going through our life in the human body with great reverence and self-respect, and not allowing others to violate your existence. And to stand up for your own self-protection is a dharma, but not at the cost of hurting another, because then that's a violation of dharma. And this is a deeper conversation. It's not just about me. It's also about me and us. And that's why this book is the next level of conversation, yeah.
What came to mind when you were just relating that was that many years ago, I was trained by an Australian social scientist named Wilford Jarvis. And he came up with, it's much more complicated than this, but basically the human emotions, and he divided them. And divided them into two large categories as constructive, creative, and compelling versus destructive, disruptive, or repelling. And that's what I've tried to live my life by, is this constructive? Is this creative? Is this compelling, solution or discussion or action? Or is it destructive? You talked about, not hurting somebody else. And it seems that a lot of our society now is living on the destructive, disruptive, repelling side. Is that what you were talking about when you mentioned earlier about humanity fell asleep? Is that the result of humanity falling asleep?
Yes, absolutely. Humanity fell asleep to its own imperative to live with a greater collective and responsible consciousness. That is why our environment has been raped. That is why our climate has been ruined. That is why our children are growing up with broken families and directionless almost. And that is why women and other gendered beings continue to experience disrespect and crimes against them. And we fell asleep because we resorted to the lower most vibration, which is a selfish, entitled, and falsely righteous vibration. And this is a collective situation. This is not just about one culture doing it over the other. Because if you go to the Eastern cultures, they may show that a dark vibration in one way, and if you look at Western cultures, it's insidious, but it's there too. But it's time to roar, and that's how we began our show. And it's time for people to wake up, and I feel like women can do that because we are being primed now because we've suffered enough. And we're waking up and saying, no more. We're just not going to participate in this paradigm anymore. And that's going to force an evolutionary agenda on entire humanity, I think.
Well, you also talked about women largely being taught to be accommodating. And I know that that was my childhood and teenage education in my family, that I needed to be accommodating. And you also mentioned the word invisible. I was really taught to be invisible too, not to make waves, not to make my parents uncomfortable. And so for people like myself, it's really difficult to overcome that childhood ingraining. So how do we express ourselves boldly? What do the Vedas teach us about using our voice boldly when we've been taught the opposite?
I think that is why my book is based upon stories that awaken us, because no matter how much we tell women who've been conditioned that please don't shrink, and you can take as much psychic, emotional, intellectual space as you want on your planet, I think stories which connect the goddess archetypes with average everyday women, which show how the goddesses refuse to shrink despite being asked to shrink or being obligated to shrink, how they didn't shrink and how they responded instead with wholeness and self-respect intact is going to be helpful, because stories, and especially if they are fun and interesting stories, tend to bypass rational thinking and they enter our subconscious and they unprogram our ego. And the ego, which believes that it has an inherently second position on the planet, is really nothing more than a bunch of thoughts. And the primary thought being that I should accommodate, for example, or I should cross my legs in this pretty way, for example, or I should paint my nails, otherwise I'm not going to make it in life. And all those things that are somewhat accommodative, they're almost like we're seducing our way or manipulating our way or explaining our way or justifying our way or making ourselves cute enough to go forward in life. All these behaviors, when they are unconscious, they are a problem. If we are conscious and we are painting our nails for the sheer joy of it, that's really different. But we should have the freedom not to paint our nails. And all of this comes forward with these stories that help us decondition the ego. And in a way, my book is less about what to say to others to come forward as a roaring goddess, but it's about how to decondition your inner voice that may still have last traces of a behavior that is overly conciliatory, or it may just be false because it's not connected to our most authentic voice. And once we've touched that authentic voice, because of the teachings I share from the Vedas, that authentic voice is also a spirit's voice. It's an inherently dharmic voice. So it won't cause a rupture on our planet, but it will cause definitely a greater awareness and a stepping into a new era for all of humanity.
You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Listen globally online from the KSQD.org website. Our topic is Roar Like a Goddess, and we're speaking with Akara Shunya, author of Roar Like a Goddess, Every Woman's Guide to Becoming Unapologetically Powerful, Prosperous, and Peaceful, and the founder of the Awakened Self Foundation. To learn more, visit awakenedself.com. Would you like to be added to our news group and get advance notice of our upcoming interviews? If so, please text Be Bold America at 22828. Text Be Bold America at 22828. And if you've signed up already, thank you very much. We will be back with our bold guest, Shunya, right after the Hightower commentary titled The Inflation Blame Game. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
Today, CEOs of big corporations are playing the tricky inflation blame game. Publicly, they moan that the pandemic is slamming their poor corporations with factory shutdowns, supply chain delays, wage hikes, and other increased costs. But wait, inside their boardrooms, executives are high-fiving each other and pocketing bonuses. What's going on? The trick is that these giants are in non-competitive markets operating as monopolies, so they can set prices, mug you and me, and scamper away with record profits. In 2019, for example, before the pandemic, corporate behemoths hauled in roughly $1 trillion in profit. In 2021, during the pandemic, They grabbed more than $1.7 trillion. This huge profit jump accounts for 60% of the inflation now slapping U.S. families. Take supermarket Goliath Kroger. Its CEO gloated last summer that, quote, a little bit of inflation is always good in our business, adding that, quote, we've been very comfortable with our ability to pass on price increases to consumers. Comfortable indeed. Last year, Kroger used its monopoly pricing power to reap record profits. Then it spent $1.5 billion of those gains not to benefit consumers or workers, but to buy back its own stock. A scam that siphons profits to top executives and big shareholders. Or take fast food purveyor McDonald's. It bragged to its shareholders that despite the supply disruptions of the pandemic and higher costs for meat and labor, its top executives had used the chain's monopoly power in 2021 to up prices, thus increasing corporate profits by a stunning 59% over the previous year. And the game goes on. We're going to have the best growth we've ever had this year, said a Wall Street banking titan. This is Jim Hightower saying, hocus pocus, this is how the rich get richer. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is brought to you by the Lowdown Happy Hour, live streamed from the Chat and Chew Cafe. Details at HightowerLowdown.org.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Akara Shunya, author of Roar Like a Goddess. And if you want a friend to hear this interview, Be Bold America is available as a podcast. Now you and your friends may listen from your favorite podcast platform, such as Apple, Google, Spotify, Radio Public, and many more. You may subscribe for free. So, Shunya, you also talk in your book about the fundamental aspects of self-empowerment is to cultivate a healthy self sense of self-worth and unconditional self-respect. How do the goddesses teach us these attributes?
In beautiful ways, the goddess stories from the Vedas illustrate situations which, you know, one can draw analogies in modern life. For example, we have a legend of Durga where she is sexually objectified. She's a really beautiful expression of divinity. She's gorgeous, she's sexual, she has everything going for her from an attractiveness perspective. And of course, she's objectified. And instead of accommodating, instead of putting up with it, or even instead of obliging it, where women silently suffer sexual objectification, she roars. And in one story, she roars with such fierceness, and she says, yes, I'm beautiful, yes, I'm sexy, yes, I'm gorgeous, but I have taken an avatar or human expression or human form not to pleasure you, but to drink your blood. And it sounds gory, and of course, modern women are not supposed to drink blood. But if you juxtapose that ancient story to modern times, it really means I'm not here to pleasure you, but I'm here to say no to you. I'm here to say, to walk away from you. I'm here to point out your disrespect. I'm going to call human resources or call 911, whatever it needs to be done. So it's a woman who takes action versus stoically suffering obliging. And we wouldn't have the Me Too movement if we had more modern-day Durgas. We wouldn't take pride in saying, Me Too, I was abused, because we would have become, by that time, unabusable. So self-respect requires some role models. And when I went looking for role models, and I wondered why I am channeling so much power now than once upon a time, it's because I have been contemplating on goddesses like Durga, goddesses like Lakshmi, where we have in her legend, where she has everything going for her, but she felt like there was some disrespect, some invisibility in her relationships, and she leaves them. And instead of being a goddess who stays and justifies that disrespect coming her way, She says, I'm worthy of respect, and she leaves. And then she re-enters the situation and chooses another partner who values her for who she is and not what gifts she brings others. And so on and so forth. We have these whole stories, these stories purporting wholeness, but they are based on self-respect and self-esteem as almost the primary values that separate an ordinary woman who's begging for respect or has conditioned herself to live without it to a goddess-like woman who is now saying, look, this is a primary value for me, and this decides whether I stay or leave. This decides whether I channel my rage or channel my peacefulness and accommodation and nurturing values, which are also part of me and part of my feminine nature. But it's not just going to come through all the time at any cost. I'm going to choose. I'm going to discern when it's okay to be nurturing, kind, and accommodating, and when I put a stop to it. So I really hope that these archetypes, which have been dealt with a treatment of psychology, not just spirituality, which address the needs of all women, irrespective of culture, religion, and even pertain to even men and people of other genders. Everybody deserves respect, and everybody deserves to ask and live by that respect for Dharma's sake. And I hope that this book will add to that greater living and greater telling it as it is.
Well, it is a brilliant book. I enjoyed reading it very much. And I also remember in it that you wrote about four goals of life. One was material security is fundamental. Pleasure seeking is important too. The higher purpose is the missing piece, and freedom is most important. Yet one woman's definition of freedom may not be the same as another's woman's definition of freedom. So can you elaborate more on the four goals and how they're empowered by these teachings?
The goddess Lakshmi is a gorgeous goddess of everything beautiful, sensual, and pleasureful, and prosperity and abundance too. And she holds up her four hands in which she's holding lotuses, and they represent these four goals, and they ask us not to be skewed in our vision and, only choose money, but then say no to pleasure, or be only all about pleasure, and then forget that we need Dharma and freedom too. It asks us to not neglect wealth and not neglect pleasure. In fact, that's a message I've tried to bring out strongly, because sometimes we women feel guilty about the money we make or ask for or want to raise. And sometimes we feel guilty for caring for ourselves and pleasuring ourselves. We have so much guilt around natural biological functions like masturbation and other things. And so it's really important to be this person for whom abundance and pleasure are divine, spiritual, and you have a permission within you to be this person that who enjoys wealth and pleasure, but at the same time, you're somebody who values Dharma and continues to grow into greater conscious behaviors, expecting that from others and giving that to others. But finally, freedom is the greatest goal, because we're not here to get caught up in relationships and obligations and towing the line of our cultures and patriarchal scripts handed down to us. Ultimately, freedom has to mean different things for different women. For the women in Iran, freedom means not having to wear the hijab and not having to follow the ridiculous rules imposed by the morality police. For the women in America, it's about reclaiming their right to their own womb and taking decisions about their own body. For the women in America, it's also about equal wages, because it's ridiculous that in 21st century, we are still dealing with, we get wages based on based on our genitals and not on what we bring to the job. And so it will mean different things. And for those women who have it going pretty good for them, for example, I personally feel that I'm in a time and space of my life where I lead a very privileged and titled and, you know, a voice where I'm self-actualized, then for me, freedom means bringing that freedom to other women. So freedom is something that we have to go on aspiring for, the freedom through meditation and connecting with that ever-free part of you, or whether it is through the route of policy or politics or activism or writing books or hosting a podcast, whatever it takes to remain free and to bring this freedom to others and to ultimately free up our planet from conditioned, patriarchal, foolish, binding scripts that not only oblige women to take a second place, but even force men to behave and think in artificial ways that severs them from their own wholeness within and ask them to be artificially manly, I think it's time to be liberated and truly breathe with freedom.
Well, we had Dr. Ruth Ben-Gayat, who's a expert on fascism and authoritarianism, on the program twice, and she was saying that chapter one of the authoritarian playbook is to suppress women. And what does the Supreme Court's decision of Dobbs versus Jackson, that took the right to choose our autonomy of our body away from 51% of this country, what message does that send to women?
The message that it sends to women is not external level suppressing, but at a subliminal level, we are being told to back off. And we're being told that you still have to live with serfdom. And we're going to come regulate your most private, most intimate dimension of being, because we women are known for our reproductive fertile function. It sets us apart from men. And now the male politics and the male-dominated culture that we live in is going to now control our womb. It's like controlling all future generations. It is like relegating us back to feudal times where women were burned on the stake for being witches, for just being who they were, these creative, beautiful, inspired souls and architects of progress and change. It is an unfortunate time, but it is also a time where, as you can see, women are coming together in new ways, powerful ways to roar and say no. So I don't think the battle is over and it has not been decided who will win. I really feel women will win this time. Oh, we're not going to stop.
I hope you're right. You know, it's interesting you say they're saying back off and we're saying we're going to roar. If you're just joining us. We're speaking with Akora Shunya, author of Roar Like a Goddess, Every Woman's Guide to Becoming Unapologetically Powerful, Prosperous, and Peaceful, and founder of the Awaken Self Foundation. Learn more by visiting awakenself.com. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
Hello, Santa Cruz. This is Ralph Nader. Start your week off right by listening to the Ralph Nader Radio Hour every Monday morning at 9 a.m. right here on KSQD. Every week we bring you the guests that don't get the exposure and the issues that don't get discussed nearly enough on commercial radio. That's every Monday morning, 9 a.m. right here on KSQD.
And that's where you're in tune. And right now the program is Be Bold America with your host, Jill Cody. We have another 15 minutes. She'll take us to the top of the hour when we'll bring you Cats on Dogs with your host, Lori Katz. And now back to Jill.
We're back with Akora Shunya. In these last few minutes, I'd like to talk to our guests about what our what we might be able to keep doing, stop doing, and start doing is women learning to roar. But I do have a couple more questions that I want to ask before we get to that. One of the points that you made was that we need to deal with self-doubt. I struggle with that a lot. Ingrained in me somehow, am I doing this right? Is that the right thing to do? Am I, you know, so can you expand on how women can deal with self-doubt more?
I think just by calling out self-doubt as something that is sometimes needed, because doubt comes up when we have to question our way. But if we educate ourselves on Dharma, and if we educate ourselves, in my opinion, on bold goddess archetypes, which are not just from India, but many cultures provide us bold women archetypes, we can then tell ourselves, well, if Durga did it this way, or Lakshmi did it this way, or Saraswati dealt with her trauma and doubt in this way, then I can do it too. Like, we need to have this conversation, inner conversation, where we look at our doubt and say, I've been taken over by this monster called self-doubt, and this feels familiar. And what am I going to do about it? I'm going to bring the light of knowledge to this darkness that seems to be tenacious, but it's just still like a cloud that's covering the sky of my mind. It is not my true nature. And what can I bring to it? I can bring to it knowledge, stories, community, empowering books and podcasts, so that this self-doubt gradually becomes revealed to be nothing but conditioning. And that's what happens. We take the contents of our mind and just live with them for years. And I can tell you this, that when I went through this period of intense, crippling self-doubt in my late 20s, early 30s, when my self-esteem had collapsed, because a marriage had collapsed, and of course the woman is always responsible for everything that's not going right in a relationship. When I was filled with self-doubt, I had this dharma, or this greater imperative within myself to discern, well, what part is judicious to experience, and what part is just unnecessary. It is cultural. I have inhaled it like virus in the air. And I talk about this feminine guilt, which brings about self-doubt and loss in self-worth that we inhale just simply by being who we are and breathing the air on planet Earth, because it is there. And every religion has stories of women who didn't doubt themselves, and then they got into trouble. And it's still in our DNA, whether we identify with ourselves with any religion or not. And we may think we are emancipated. Jill, you and I are emancipated women with a lot of opportunities, and we've made a difference. And yet we've had episodes or even decades of some lingering self-doubt. And so now it's time to annihilate that monster, because Durga annihilated monsters that represent these dark, foreboding, unnecessary thought clusters. There's nothing but the conditioned ego. And the more we have these kind of conversations, the more we have books like Roar Like a Goddess, the more we have role models who say, wait a minute, are you going to lose your inner battle to self-doubt all over again, the less it will have a hold on you. And I can just speak from my own experience and experience of countless people and women over the last decade who I've been sharing this knowledge with, that there is a way forward, and there is a kind of consciousness that we can live with, which has all emotions intact, including self-doubt, but not to the point where it has become a disease and it holds us back. And then we can move forward and be the person we were meant to be. And never give up on your future self if you're listening to me right now. And I hope this knowledge that I'm sharing with you that changed my life and transformed me from a woman who sought permissions and gave excessive explanations to a woman who is leading a change worldwide, you too can connect with your inner dharma and say goodbye to unnecessary, unwanted, artificial self-doubt that has taken, you know, that's taking up too much of your psychic space. You don't need it. And just like you want to get rid of cancer from your physical body, you want to be done with self-doubt.
Well, I love that sentence you just said about never give up on your future self. That's a lovely thought.
Also, another question. And I would say you can even...
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I just wanted to say to that further that I kept imagining my future self as a woman with more conviction and less self-doubt, and gradually I became that woman.
There was another question I had, which was, you talked about in the book, cultivate conscious detachment. What is conscious detachment?
It's a Vedic tool, a cognitive tool, and conscious detachment in Sanskrit, the language of the Vedas, is called vairagyam, which literally means decolor yourself from your current relationships or circumstances that are holding you back. Because after a while, it's not the toxic relationship that has imprisoned you. It's your own attachment to that toxic relationship that's holding you back. And so conscious detachment is before you leave that relationship, and physically separate yourself and then come back and then separate yourself, it's more important to decolor yourself, to emotionally disinvest from that and to stand back as a neutral goddess witness to look at this life, look at that person and look at your own self in relationship with that person. And gradually what happens is there is relaxing of the tenacious hold that relationship had on you. And you can look at yourself with curiosity as a scientific onlooker to see all the ways that you are rescuing or you're being codependent or you're allowing another to manipulate you or play brain games with you. And the more neutral observing that you do of you in a certain relationship with a certain person or in a certain circumstance, the more you watch in a disinvested, neutrally charged manner, in a non-charged manner with a neutral state of being, the more detached you will become. And as you detach, you will regain your old freedom to renegotiate new agreements and new ways of being. Sometimes I'm in a relationship where I begin to feel some emotional injury or self-respect, then before I speak up, before I leave, before I get closer and try and make up, I just detach for a few days, few months, few weeks, and I just look at it. And there's a lot of learning there, and I observe all the ways in which I have given away my power or I am simply not acting from my power, which is there for me to use. And it's so knowledgeable and so informative to do that. So detachment leads to a restoration of our power, for sure.
Well,
and we don't do that. Everywhere I meet women and they're complaining and they're acting and they're reacting and they're fuming and they're sorrowful and they're taking antidepressants. And I say, step back, pause, look at your own self. And that itself is enough to shatter the old paradigm.
Well, that was so moving. Well, in the last couple of minutes, we like to ask, and we've been talking about it, but anything else that you would add for us who are listening, what we can keep doing, stop doing, and start doing?
Stop being the role that you're playing in your life. Be the soul that you are.
Anything we should...
You're a greater power than just this being a mom, wife, daughter. Be that power.
Mm. So anything we should start... Well, you've talked about many things, but anything else we should start doing?
I would just say, I hope you start reading my book.
Yes.
A shameless plug for it. And the reason for that is that this book is filled with wisdom that's like 101 that you need to get going. And if it's not the book, then stay connected to sources of podcasts. knowledge through podcasts, through radio talks, through other books, which continue to make you question your current situation, your current agreements. Just don't give up this inner work that you have to do until you achieve the freedom that you must live with.
And don't give up on your future self. Sonia, I am so grateful for the opportunity to speak with you today. And you know, thank you for acknowledging my two books. That was my way to roar. And I've done sort of a paradigm shift where I'm feeling my radio show and the podcast is my roaring as well. So thank you for what you're doing to empower women and also empowering our younger women. Our future depends on it. So thank you for being our bold and impressive guest today.
Thank you so much. It's always fun to talk to roaring women. Thank you.
It was delightful to talk with you. Remember, if you'd like to learn more, you may find Akara Shunya at awakenedself.com. What's next on Be Bold America on November 6th at 5 p.m. will be Nice Democracy You Got There, Shame of Something Happened to It. We will have the great pleasure to speak with longtime Bay Area talk show host John Rothman, formerly with KGO Radio. Just 2 years short of its 100th year anniversary, KGO suddenly closed its doors. We'll ask John what happened to such a venerable Bay Area radio station. More importantly, we'll get John's take on the upcoming election just 2 days away from his interview. Does he think we'll still have a democracy after it? John's knowledge about politics is extensive, having talked about politics for 15 years on KGO Radio, but also because of his involvement with political figures such as Richard Nixon, Senator Clinton Kopp, Senator Frank Church, and being chief of staff to Senator Milton Marks. So join us for Nice Democracy You Got There, Shame if Something Happened to It, on Be Bold America, November 6th. At 5 p.m., remember, Be Bold America is available as a podcast. Now you may listen to the show anytime for free from your favorite podcast platform. I want to give a special thank you to today's Be Bold America's program engineer and our station's program director, Howard Feldstein. You're listening to KSQD Santa Cruz, many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. Stay tuned for Cats on Dogs with Lori Katz. My name is Jill Cody, and thank you for listening to Be Bold America. Until next time, keep stop start and keep roaring.